This episode of 1 MHz is brought to you by Navis Pack and Ship. When you need to safely send or receive computers, art, electronics, or other hard-to-ship items, go Navis to solve your shipping problems at GONAVIS.com. From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 MHz, an Apple II podcast. In this episode, the secret hidden song title will be, let's go for something jazzy. How about Somewhere Along the Line by Dinah Washington? So I'll try to sneak that in and you try to spot it. Greetings, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Xur and the Kodan Armada. Oh, wait, it's still July, isn't it? Ah, I'm a month early. Ignore that part. This is just a podcast. Nothing else is happening.
This is Lee Green. In just a moment, you'll be meeting Chris Malum. It's our contention that Chris is symbolic of the beginning of a new wave in home communications. Chris is the owner and operator of his own computer. And if the prophets of the 20th century are to be believed, we'll all be joining him soon.
And welcome back to 1 MHz, just a podcast. Not a lot of news going on right now in the Apple II world because we are right on the cusp of another Kansas Fest. And so, of course, when people have big things to announce or release, they save them up for Kansas Fest days. And before that, a lot of people are hunkered down trying to get things prepared for then. So it's one of the slower news times in the Apple II world, but there is some news. Kicking it off, unfortunately, is a bit of disappointing news. Anthony Martino and Henry Corbis, sorry, meshing their names, have both announced that their sites are going on hiatus. That would be the Ultimate Apple II site and Reactive Micro. Bit of a shame, of course, because that means there's two less places for now that we can go to get new hardware for our vintage machines. So it's unfortunate, but completely understandable. I mean, look at me and how rarely I get to put out one of these podcasts. The Apple II world has become very much one of hobbyists, and it's very difficult sometimes to devote a lot of full-time efforts towards it. So completely understandable. But that said, Henry then turned around and almost immediately did something to give back to the community. Fabulous fellow. He scanned the Apple Service Technical Procedure manuals. Gosh, I hope I got that right this time. And he has sent them over. He sent the scans over to Apple2Scans.net for hosting. Very nice of Apple2Scans.net to do that because these are quite large files. The manuals are a great and interesting snapshot of hardware and hardware fixing techniques and procedures for the vintage Apple era. So there's things for both Apple II and vintage Macintoshes and peripherals. If you have an interest in hardware of the period, which you probably do if you're listening to this podcast, or you have something that you want to repair, or you want to find out just if you're looking from the historical standpoint how things would have been fixed or approached to the period, I would really recommend you scurry off and download some of these things. I have done so, and they're really interesting. Just browsing through them from a high level standpoint, I have found it quite fascinating to look at the procedures and what's involved in things. Anyway, very interesting and really, really amazingly nice of Henry to do that and to send them off and to have them hosted. So a fantastic contribution to the community. Apple II Go has come out. APPLE, then IIGO, so Apple II Go. It's another Apple II emulator. What's the twist on this one is that it's written in Java, so it's available as a Mac OS X widget. It's also available as a Java applet, so you can run it in most modern browsers, and it's available as something called a midlet for mobile phones. I am completely unfamiliar with what the heck midlets are, but it seems that it has one. So it's another approach to get access to an emulated Apple II. And what I find most interesting about this is that it's an approach that would let you carry an Apple II emulator around with you on a mobile phone. So I think that's a really neat twist on the Apple II emulation. I have downloaded it, and the site is quite nice. It's got a discussion forum. It's got the usual page that's telling you why it doesn't include Apple II ROMs, but where you might want to go look to find one, which if you have used any Apple II emulator, you will be familiar with that. It also has some game ROMs that I think they are hosting to get you started in playing around with some things in the applet. I have yet to actually play with the emulator just because it's been crazy busy times here in Carrington Land. But judging from the site and the forum, this looks like a great beginning to a new emulator. And it's exciting that it's out there. I like the idea of another emulator, in particular one that can run on some platforms that maybe the Apple II wouldn't have been on before. So I'm excited about that bit. And I think that's just about it for new news. Like I said, it's a slow time in the Apple II world. There is something that is not so new news, though, that I'd like to bring your attention to. It's a site called The Artful Gamer. A fellow named Chris Lepine writes it. I think it's pronounced Lepine. It's spelled Lepine. So we'll go with Lepine. So it's a site that is, it bills itself as trying to find the poetry in games, which makes it sound much more flighty than it is. Chris is a grad student, and there's real meat in the articles that he writes. It's essentially a blog-type site, and he doesn't update that often. I think the last update was a few months ago, back in May. But he's been doing it for a few years, and I can't really judge him for the sporadic updates. Let's look at 1 megahertz track record, shall we? So, what Chris is doing is examining really interesting ideas in the gaming experience, rather than evaluating a game itself or a genre or reviewing a game based on its graphics or its gameplay or what have you. What he'll do is write an article about the nature of gaming interpretation. He wrote a really interesting one about how we don't interpret games, they interpret us. Or he'll write about the emotional impact of a type of game, or the importance of a certain type of gaming criticism, or something inherently false about gaming nostalgia, or something like that. So really meaty, interesting topics that I promise you will plant seeds inside you if you go there and read it. It really is a site worth bookmarking and coming back to for when he does updates. Fantastic and interesting thing. And I'm sorry I have sat on it for like 2 years without bringing it up and hoarding all the info, because I promise you, if you're interested in something like 1 megahertz and my flighty little approach to saying, oh, wasn't this a fun game and here's what's going on here, Chris takes it to an entirely new level, and I cannot recommend it enough. So Run Don't Walk, Artful Gamer, and I'll have a link in the show notes for all your reading goodness.
Their dreams were dying in Independence, Missouri.
Folks around here are taking the trail to Oregon. I reckon we ought to do the same.
The Oregon Trail?
It'll cure the boredom.
We might learn a thing or two.
You won't learn anything.
They packed up and left the only home they've ever known.
Pa thinks he knows everything. I can't wait to start my new life in Oregon.
What new life? You're gonna be a carpenter, just like him.
Nobody wants to be the carpenter!
I'll take 4 oxen and all the bullets $1,600 will get me.
Want any food or spare parts? Each person will consume.
No, shopkeep, just the bullets. Just the bullets.
Now, they'll learn quickly that the trail is no game. It's survival.
This trail is filled with thieves, engines, and horror I dare not say. You will die on this trail, just like old Poopface.
Pa! I got me another one!
That's over 1,400 pounds of meat!
But son, we can only carry back 10 pounds.
Ride the adventure.
Hey, how does that rush? You're gonna get a snake bite!
Ride the drama.
Down here and help me cock this wagon.
Dad, I told you, I don't want to be a carpenter, I want to be a banker.
Banker's not gonna help me ford this river!
Ride the trail.
Huh?
How did your brother get dysentery?
Ow, 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 ow.
In the first film based on the hit educational video game.
We knew that this would be difficult. Not many people will get there. But we will make it.
Oregon Trail. Coming soon.
Okay, kids, let's talk about a game. This episode, I want to tell you about this game called Bureaucracy that I recently played. It's an Infocom game from, I think, 1987, so right at the end of the Infocom era. It was written by Douglas Adams. Oh, actually, that's something we'll start with. I'm holding the box in my hand here, and just down in the bottom corner, in the regular size text, it says Interactive Fiction Plus by Douglas Adams and the staff of Infocom. And that's it. And it's an interesting thing because it's Douglas Adams. It's 87. So this is a well after Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, his famous as a radio program and as a book. And in fact, a couple years earlier came out as an Infocom game. So certainly the Infocom audience in particular would be well aware of Douglas Adams. Yet the packaging for this doesn't scream Douglas Adams. It really wasn't used much for promotional purposes. I find that kind of interesting. I have read, but only in poorly sourced sources, that the staff had to do quite a bit of writing on this because Douglas was late or something, and I think they had to finish it maybe without him, but that might be apocryphal. I don't know. I just do find it interesting that it doesn't really scream the Douglas Adams things. So on the front of the box, and it's your typical stripy gray Infocom box, and if you're unfamiliar with them, I think I've discussed at least one Infocom title before, so go back and listen to that podcast. And they're text adventure games, which means they have no graphics, or rather, as they would have said in the promotional material of the time, it uses the most powerful graphics processor on the planet, your brain. Whatever. And so this one also requires 128K of memory. Tiny, tiny, tiny by modern standards, but quite big by Infocom standards. So I find that interesting. On the front is a caged teller window. On the top it says Bureaucracy, and there is a sign on it hanging that simply says, please use next window. That gives you a sense of what goes on in this film, in this game, being called Bureaucracy. It is about having to overcome bureaucracy, which is interesting because, of course, most fantasy games, including text adventures and games of the time, are normally more about fighting dragons or being underwater or being a pirate or being in space and that sort of thing. And this is a game simply about being in the modern age and trying to get a couple of forms processed. So on the back, it says, important. Our record shows that you do not have a license to operate this software. There's an interesting approach, huh? normally, you would be required to complete the license application form and mail it with proof of purchase to our licensing department and then wait the customary 4 to 6 months for processing. Luckily, for your convenience, we have, at last minute and at great expense, installed a remarkable new online electronic application form on this very disk, which will be processed by our modern 24-hour computer service moments after you fill it in. That is actually how the game begins. This is a game where you are attempting to, at the start, you attempt to license your software. And it'll ask you things like, what's your favorite color? What's your least favorite color? What's your gender? You fill all that out. It will then get it wrong. If it uses a color, it will use your least favorite color. It will continually refer to you as the incorrect gender and that sort of thing. So anyway, to proceed with the back, it says, Bureaucracy. Everyone, at one time or another, feels bound up in an endless swath of red tape. In Bureaucracy, best-selling humorist Douglas Adams draws on his own battles with beetledom to create a hilarious misadventure. You'll find yourself in the midst of a bureaucratic muddle so convoluted that you can't help but laugh. You know, they're actually right about that. This is a very funny game. To proceed. You've just landed a great new job and moved to a spiffy house in a nice little town. You're even being sent to Paris this very afternoon for a combination training seminar and vacation. What could possibly go wrong? The answer, of course, is everything. When the bank refuses to acknowledge your change of address form, you'll find yourself entangled in a series of bureaucratic mishaps that take you from the feeding trough of a greedy llama to the lofty branches of a tree deep in the Zalgazan jungle. The distinctive humor that made Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy a runaway success will keep you in stitches as you confront a series of bureaucratic puzzles and experience the thrill of outsmarting the powers that be. It's such a funny game. It's got Douglas Adams all over it. So if you are a fan of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and a fan of things like the Meaning of Lif or the Dirk Gently series, those two books, which I love, then you will find much to enjoy about this. And what's neat about Bureaucracy is if you are a fan of Douglas Adams, this game gives you new things from him. Like if you play The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game, which is fantastic, you might already know the whole plot because maybe you've read the books, maybe you've seen the film, maybe you've listened to the radio program, maybe you just have nerdy friends who have quoted it cover to cover. So it's not going to necessarily be that much new to you. But if you play Bureaucracy, you could have read all of Douglas Adams' books and you're going to get brand new Douglas Adams in this. So he's such a funny writer. And if you're a fan, this is definitely a game to check out. Here's the downside. The game is stinking hard. Oh my goodness. I actually started playing this thing like 3 months ago or something, and it took me forever to solve it. I was insisting upon doing it without help, and that was a foolish, foolish, foolish thing for me to do. So I will recommend that you play this thing and use online hints, because some of the solutions, quite frankly, are nefarious. They're ridiculous. I cannot believe I solved this game, because I just had to just start guessing at some things by the end. It is very, very hard. But it's also very, very funny. Now, the game itself supposedly came about because of an experience that Douglas Adams actually had. Again, supposedly, I never got to ask him about this, but supposedly, he had filled out a change of address form. His bank didn't process it correctly. He had to keep going back, filling out forms, talking to people over and over again. It was a major, major hassle until finally it all got sorted out and the bank sent him a letter of to apologize for messing up so badly. And of course, they sent it to his old address. So that's the sort of thing. That idea was the kernel behind this. And that sort of frustration is the heart of the game. And of course, the game itself is intentionally trying to be frustrating. So it really sometimes walked the line where I would be thinking, this game is really getting on my nerves, which is ironic because in the game, you have a blood pressure meter. And every time you get thwarted by something, your blood pressure goes up. And if it goes up too high, then boom, you have an aneurysm and that's how you die in the game. So honestly, sometimes I'd be playing this game and I would just want to scream at the screen. But at the same time, being a Douglas Adams plot, there were lots of moments that would undercut that frustration with humor. And I really do think that he does pull it off. It gets right to the edge sometimes. There were many times where I almost gave up on this game because it's so difficult. But it's very, very funny. And I would just leave it for a few days and then I'd have another idea and the game would invariably drag me back in where I would attempt something new. So let's look at the box and let's look at the packaging because, of course, what's interesting about Infocom games is that they came with feelies. Partly, as I think I've discussed before, as a means of copyright protection, because you would need to use bits of the feelies, the paper and objects that come with the game in the game itself, but partly because they are the visual aids and they are the tangible bits that come with the game and that separated out Infocom games from others of the sort. So we open up our Infocom box here, and inside is You're Ready to Move, the Fillmore Fiduciary Trust. So it's the manual takes the form of a brochure from the bank telling you about how to process everything to move, how to fill out a change of address form, what other sorts of forms you put in, that sort of thing. So it's written very, very humorously, and it's a great introduction to the world of the game. And then we open up the little box here. I do like to open things up on this podcast. So we have the disc. It's a single disc for Bureaucracy, 16 sector. It says side one. Other side is side two. I thought that was an opportunity for humor that they didn't seize calling it side two. So we then open up this. We have piece of paper. From Happy Tech, we'll bring a smile to your computer. It's addressed to Occupant, 5 Hippo Vista, Rhinoceros, New Jersey, 81818. And it's a letter from Ollie Fassbaum, the manager of Happy Tech, about welcoming you to this is where you're going to be working, and this is a letter welcoming you to your new job. An important letter. You will need to read that to finish the game. Sorry, I had to bend down. There's also this. That was me tapping a tiny little pencil on the microphone. It's really, really, really tiny. It's like the thinnest pencil I have ever seen. And that comes to help you fill out forms. Speaking of forms, inside here also is an Infocom registration. There is the usual get help fast, send for our official Infocom hint booklets. Oh, I was really tempted to call this number. There's the Apple II series guide. There's your passport to the United Products of Infocom, so if you want to buy other items. And then there are the two things that matter here. We have Popular Paranoia magazine. Quite a small magazine, really just 4 pages. It folds out. How do they learn so much about you? You bare your soul each time you put out your garbage. Introducing Popular Paranoia magazine, the eyes in the back of your head. And so it's an introduction to this new magazine that's coming out and asking you if you want to subscribe. It talks about how if you can answer these 16 questions, you're a paranoia person. And Popular Paranoia is for you. If you can't answer these questions, don't you think there are things you ought to know? And the questions are stuff like, who is their leader? What secret FBI surveillance method is masquerading under the guise of public service? What well-meaning legislation was actually a communist-inspired plot to destroy the American family? How many health fascists are there in the FDA? How are the dentists of America conspiring to destroy the minds of our children? And that sort of thing. So it's got lots of information about what you would find in the magazine and hints about people who might be behind the scenes running stuff. Again, might come in handy in the game. Just saying. And then there's also, and I found this very funny, Form GIC2FIT. That's the Fillmore Better Beezer card application to fill out to get a credit card. It's a 3-part NCR form. And what's subtle, and something I hadn't even realized when I first got it, is that the 3 pages have different things on each page. So if you fill out it writes through all 3 pages, but you're giving incorrect answers on pages 2 and 3, because like say on page 1, it'll say employer's name, but on page 2, that same slot says spouse's name. And on page 3, it says last fired from. So anyway, this I only discovered a month or so into playing the game. I was very, very frustrated. I was just looking for other clues inside, and it was a perfectly timed bit of comic relief. I really needed it. The game itself is difficult, as I said, but filled with interesting puzzles. I would suggest, if you like Infocom games and you haven't played this one, then step up to the plate and play it. Infocom seems to be like Pixar before Cars 2. Where they just keep knocking it out of the park. And in the same way that a bad Pixar film is still better than almost any film you're going to go watch from someone else, a supposedly bad Infocom game is far, far better than most other games you could play from the period or, frankly, today. The level of the quality of the narrative in an Infocom game is so far beyond other games of the period and, frankly, so far beyond even modern games. I'd like to say it's funny, but it's not funny. And I think it's a shame that we don't have games with this level of narrative in them anymore. I know there's things like the BioWare games, and they put a lot into plot, and I enjoy them. But BioWare does seem to put out the same story over and over again. If you look at it in the broader strokes, every BioWare game follows the exact same plot points. Whether you're fighting with swords or fighting with lasers, it's the same game, but still one that I enjoy. Infocom games have such a larger variety. And I don't remember ever playing a game that was about this, that was about just trying to get something accomplished in the modern world using forms rather than swords and guns, using cajoling and underhanded tactics and using wordplay and that sort of, using a llama, that sort of thing. It's funny. It's difficult. It's interesting. The feelies are appropriate and filled with subtle, subtle clues that you won't know are important until you're facing with the puzzle. I cannot recommend it enough. 5 out of 5. Fantastic. Once again, Infocom. Awesome. And if I have piqued your interest, of course, as usual, you have the opportunity to have not just a copy of the game, but my copy of the game in our standard cartoon head cookie draw giveaway. So send feedback to just feedback@monsterfeed.com, and anywhere in the subject, write something along the lines of cookie jar or Infocom or bureaucracy, if you can spell it, because I kept having difficulty. And I will put them all in, I will print them out, and as usual, I will draw from the cookie jar, which I am going to do now for our copy of last month's game, which was the search for the most, as if it's every month, search for the most amazing thing. So hold on, let me pull out a name. And we are, oh my goodness, I can't pronounce your name. So Chris in Ohio, Chris Krudzyski, Chris that has K's and C's and more K's and Y's in the last name, and lives in Ohio. You are the winner of the search for the most amazing thing. I will send you that. And a vowel. and I'd like to apologize to the fellow who won the copy of Wasteland. I sent it to you with insufficient postage, and it came back. And then I sent it again, thinking, oh my goodness, I gotta put more postage on it. Turns out, no, I had your address incorrect. It's been coming back because of an undeliverable address. I have corrected that. You must be wondering why it's been months now and you haven't received your game. I will get it out shortly with a bonus to apologize for how late it was. So that's it for this month. I hope you enjoyed my little take on bureaucracy. And do write in if you are interested in getting a copy of the game. And do say hello if you are heading down to Kansas Fest, as I will be shortly. I believe tomorrow. Next week I will be heading out, and hopefully this podcast will be published before that. I look forward to seeing everyone again at Kansas Fest. Can't wait. It was such a good time the first time around. I'm not giving a session this time. I'm just sort of going down to relax, hang out, and bask in the Apple II wonder of it all. I look forward to seeing all you Apple II keeners there, and I look forward to hearing your feedback about this show. And as always, you can write in at any time. I do read everything I get. I can sometimes take a couple of months to get back to you. I apologize for that. So, see you next time. This has been 1 Megahertz, a Monster Feet production, and like all Monster Feet productions, the original material in this show is released to the public domain. Feedback, as always, can be sent to feedback@monsterfeet.com. See you next time.